Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of August 20th, 2019, and this is episode number 405, and this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, and we are live right here on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com, and good to see you. Good to see everybody there live in the chat room, hanging out on a nice summer afternoon. Or evening. Is it evening? Yeah, it's still a little light up. We got a nice storm heading in to town, which is fantastic. Maybe it'll cool off a little bit. Probably not. Probably be really hot and humid here in Northeast Ohio. But can't complain. I mean, I guess I'll be complaining when I have, or I won't be complaining when I have oceanfront property in 20 years. But we'll talk about that at a later time. Tonight, we've got some new news. We've got some alligator stuff. I know everybody likes. I'm really excited that everybody likes the alligator stuff. I think it's a nice diversion from your normal, everyday kind of faked UFO stuff and faked Bigfoot stuff and these silly, just awfully silly Loch Ness Monster stories. But hey, it's in the news. I'm going to talk about it, unless it's people trying to use it for money, which is why I've ignored a few stories in the news. I've had more than one person email me a whole list of UFO stories that I'm not going to talk about because they're fake. They're created for money, and I've talked about that here on the show in the past. Certain few people that are out there trying to peddle different videos, faking stories to get money for their stories, and I'm not even going to talk about it. But we are going to talk about, in addition to this alligator, a sea serpent. A sea serpent has been photographed on the East Coast, and I got proof. You're going to see it right in the chat room tonight. So if you're not in the chat room, you might want to make your way over there somehow, some way. You'll find it. Well, also, unfortunately, I know people are getting tired of this. I'm getting tired of having to do all this research on it as well. The Storm Area 51, or as it's known now, as alien stock. But we all know what's going to happen when this this thing goes live next month. It's going to be chaos. And not only is it chaotic, and they spent a little bit of time yesterday dealing with some stuff that we'll talk about. Also, there's some controversy and some conspiracy theories running amok about this event. Some things that are being said that are not true by the insiders in this event. Some really interesting stuff that we have dug up, and I'm going to air all the dirty laundry tonight out in the rain. We'll also talk about I could just say it now, new Ghost Hunters show debuts tomorrow. I just read the story. I guess that's it. That's all you need to know. Well, I got some more details. We'll talk about the new Ghost Hunters and the new and improved Ghost Hunters, which I'm making fun of that because they're actually calling the old Ghost Hunters, it's no longer Ghost Hunters. It's called Ghost Hunters Classic. I don't know, it's weird. It's creepy. Speaking of creepy, we're going to talk about those creepy dolls down in Missouri. It's kind of reminiscent to a story that we covered here on the show a few years ago, and we'll talk about that. It's weird how some of this stuff, everyone thinks it's a one-of-a-kind off event, but if you dig deep enough, you find out that a lot of these strange, spooky stories have happened somewhere in the past. And so we'll dig that up and we'll talk about that tonight. And it's the year of dolls. I mean, we've had, Annabelle, their new movie this year, and, you know, people copycat stuff they see on TV, like the It movie a couple of years ago when we had the clown pandemic all over the United States. You can thank the media for that. And I think you can thank the media for the Storm Area 51 getting out of control as well, even though that started on social media. But anyway, I do want to mention a couple of paranormal conferences and conventions taking place this weekend. We've got the 10th Annual Michigan Paranormal Convention in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, August 22nd through the 24th. And that's it. It's the only one in the ghost area going on this weekend. But we do have, I thought there was one. Nope. No UFO ones. Not until September. And in cryptozoology, we have I guess that's two weekends away, too. The International Bigfoot Conference and Film Festival. That's not until August 30th in Kennewick, Washington. But I also want to mention a couple of other ghost events because I made a couple of promises. But that's okay. I feel bad for this one. The HillCon. I had it written down. I had an email to myself, and I still forgot to put it on the list up until last week. HillCon, September 21st, 2019, in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. That is a good one. That's you want to go to that place. It's a really, really interesting building. The Haunted Hillview Manor. It's a really cool place. Just watch out for the groundhogs. They will swallow you up. They'll drag you underground, and you'll never be seen again. They're big, and they're friendly. They're friendly. That's a cool place to go hang out, and I'm sure that's going to be a really good event. Also, in Pennsylvania, I do want to mention the Western Pennsylvania Conference on the Unexplained, happening November 9th and 10th in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Some friends of mine will be there talking. Eric Altman is one of them. That looks like a really fun weekend. The more I think about that, the more I read about it, gosh, I wish I could go to that. Nick Redfern will also be there, as well as Ron Murphy, the crypto guru himself. And if you tell him that I said that, he'll give you... No, he won't give you anything. He'll just laugh. Anyway, Ron Murphy, excellent presenter. Eric Altman, an excellent presenter, as well as an excellent researcher and an all-around really cool guy. I just say that to see if he's listening to the show, that's all. No, I'm just kidding. He's a great guy. This list of conferences, conventions, it's all over the United States. So take a look. There's still... there's a handful left this year in kind of all over the place. And of course, as you get into October, they take off. And I know I don't have the entire list of conferences, conventions. There's no way I could know all of them that are going on everywhere. So if you know of a conference convention happening in your backyard that I've not included on this list, let me know. You can email me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or go to my website at paranewsinsider.com. Or no, it's not at paranewsinsider.com. It is just paranewsinsider.com. And there's a contact link. You can click on that and send me some information, or you can find me on Facebook at Paranews Insider, or Twitter, which is now at Paranews Insider. There's no reason why you can't get a hold of me. I'm out there. Well, I am out there, but I'm also out there on social media and here on this website as well. So get out there before the year's over. Oh, and one last one, the October Haunt Fest 2019. And Cayuga, Indiana, October 30th. That one's a pretty good one, too. And look at all the Michigan ones. If you're in Michigan, there's a lot of stuff in Michigan this year. It's unusual. Not really unusual. They usually have a really good UFO event, a couple of pretty good ghost events as well, which I went to one already this year. Anyway, yeah, check it out. ParanewsInsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top, where it's ParanewsInsider.com/events. More visitors to that than on that site than any other site that I own. So it's awfully busy. And I do appreciate those of you out there who have emailed me about these events. If you're listening, I do appreciate it tremendously. What else is happening out there in my little corner of the world? Well, nothing, it seems like. So we're going to jump into paranormal news this week here for the August 20th week And it's been, you know, it's been kind of choppy the last couple of weeks. So you expect usually the fall kind of picks up right here towards, I guess, the back to school season, you could call it, right between, I should say, right before Labor Day. It seems to be a little, usually a spike, but it's been kind of quiet out here. I don't know if it's the weather or what's going on, but it's been interesting. And speaking of the weather, as long as it's warm out there, any alligator out there in the north, well, they got a chance. You know, we've talked about snakes in the past. We had Wessie the snake up there near Portland, Maine, a couple of years ago. That was the number one story of the year here on the Paranormal News, which I'm already thinking about that for 2019, the top paranormal news stories of the year. And you wonder what's going to make that list. Are alligators going to make that list this year? I don't know. They could. They might be. And alligators in general, you know, regular alligators are really not cryptozoological. But I do talk about them because sometimes they appear in places that they're not supposed to. And some cryptozoologists don't like to include out-of-place animals on the list of cryptids. But it's, for me, it's really interesting. I mean, because we know. We know how they got there. People dump them off. They try to smuggle them in their yoga pants from Florida, and they somehow just end up in somebody's drainage ditch in Pittsburgh, or in a small little pond or lagoon in Chicago, which has happened this year. But really and truly, they're, you can make an argument either way, that they are cryptids or they're not cryptids. But I enjoy these stories because it's kind of a little bit of a break from your typical everyday arguing over videos and stories of some paranormal claims, you know, UFO sightings and things that are just fakes, and Bigfoot sightings of people wearing, you know, a hoodie in the background. But anyway, alligators, you know, they've been making a lot of news lately, if you've been paying any attention. Florida, obviously, all the time in the news down there, either eating people, which there's been some bones discovered lately. I think, I don't forget how many victims they've been pulling out of ponds lately. Don't go swimming in ponds in Florida. You really realize there are alligators there, right? I don't know. But the alligators, you may say, well, there's a fence there. You can't get in. So I'm going to go swimming. Well, got video proof, and this isn't the first time I've seen a video of an alligator scaling a fence. They also swim in swimming pools. Let's see, there was one in North Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina. They had to close a road because a 7-foot-long alligator was blocking traffic hanging out on the road. Not fun, not cool. But, you know, alligators are common in Florida, North Carolina, so this isn't a huge thing for these people, not all over North Carolina, mostly on the coast there, but Florida, they're pretty much everywhere. But again, this year, there's been a lot of stories of alligators popping up in random places where they shouldn't be. And again, obviously let loose by humans. But another rogue alligator sighting has made the news this week. Pleasant County Sheriff's and the St. Mary's Police Department of West Virginia discovered a 3.5-foot-long alligator wandering around the streets. The alligator was successfully captured and is apparently headed to Charleston, South Carolina for, I guess, rehabilitation. I don't know. Is he entering a 12-step program? I'm not sure. They're pretty resilient creatures. Alligators, unfortunately, are commonly locked up all over the place. I believe there was one in New Mexico recently that I read about, 7-foot-long alligator in a kiddie pool for over 10 years. Yikes. Yeah, I don't think I'd want to have one as a pet either. It's probably cool at first. I mean, yeah, I grew up watching Don Johnson on Miami Vice, and he had an alligator called Elvis on his boat. Pretty cool, pretty funny, but yeah, scared the heck out of most people, including his partner Tubbs. Didn't care for him too much. Is this 80s night? No, it's not going to be 80s night. Anyway, back to St. Mary's, West Virginia. So alligators are known to reach a lot further north than what I think a lot of people realize. There are alligators as far north as Virginia, living just north of the North Carolina border. Again, granted, on the coast where it's more temperate, they're in the swampy areas, but they're pretty controlled. But you just wonder, warm weather, how far along they can get going north. So this latest sighting in St. Mary's, West Virginia, was close to Middle Island Creek, and Middle Island Creek empties into the Ohio River. So, let your imagination wander. If that got into the Ohio River, you never know where it could end up. Now, the area is just east of Marietta, Ohio, and northeast of Parkersburg, West Virginia, which, again, are not common areas where alligators live. And again, unfortunately, all signs point to this being another abandoned alligator. And yes, it would not survive in the cold. Once the fall air hits and it gets pretty consistently cold, these guys will not be able to handle that cold air consistently. It makes their metabolism slow, and they also become slow movers themselves. Not good. Not good for their survival. Poor alligators. Stop taking them as pets. All right. Get off my soapbox now. So let's talk about this giant sea serpent. It's true, it happened. There's a picture of it. It's got to be real. Giant sea serpent was photographed off the coast of Cape Cod back on August 4th, and the photograph was taken by a professional shark spotter. His name is Wayne Davis, and he claims this creature is about 300 yards long. I mean, he would know. Davis posted the photograph to Facebook, calmly stating that he had, in fact, photographed a sea serpent. And of course, Facebook, as it does, went wild with accusations. Of course, when Davis decided to spoil the fun by stating that he thought, it was people who went on the defensive about all this. They got all mad, and he spoiled it. He claimed, he didn't claim it was a sea serpent. He just said, "Hey, I photographed a sea serpent," and everybody bought into it, and everybody was speculating as to what this creature could have been, how big it was, what it was doing, so on and so forth. But, it was all tongue in cheek, and he spoiled the fun. And I do have a picture of that monster. And I'll throw it in the chat room, maybe. See all this fun you're missing? Cape Cod monster, there he is. Oh my goodness, how scary. Wait till you see the doll pictures later on. You'll really be scary. There it is. There's the monster. And there's the Facebook post. It's ginormous. Scary looking. Davis was out shark spotting from the air for the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy when he captured the image near Cape Cod's Nauset Beach Dunes. Davis told a captivated Facebook audience that the dark shape was not a creature, but an elongated school of pogies, or menhaden, I'm sorry, menhaden, which obviously didn't suit the, I guess, the outnumbering opinion that this was definitely a creature. Everyone was buying into this. Of course, it's his fault he started it. But yeah, pogies are menhaden, which are little fish. They're members of the herring family, and they do gather close to shore in pods. But a lot of people were arguing, saying, "Oh no, that can't be true. That can't be pods of fish. It's unlike anything we've ever seen." Of course, Davis got a laugh out of that, as he's been an aerial photographer for 30 years. And he's quite familiar with many things that would look very foreign to most people. And he kind of set people straight. It's like, I'm pretty sure I've seen a lot more schools of fish than most of you guys, probably all you guys combined. So, yeah, he tried to set it straight. But then, that's what happens when you say something like that. You say that it's a sea serpent. People pretty much believe anything they see on the social media, Facebook or Instagram or otherwise, if you claim that you found something, people will truly believe. And Davis is not a stranger to this type of controversy. Just a couple of weeks ago, in fact, he took an aerial photograph of a white shark that had some mysterious circles of something underneath, and people started to question it. And of course, somebody said something about this being UFOs. And as soon as you say UFOs, it doesn't take too much for people to start buying into that as well. So you can see this picture taken by Wayne Davis, and it's kind of green-ish water, and you see a bunch of circles underneath the shark. Well, again, he spoiled it. A lot of people said, some people thought this was actually a UFO hiding under the water. But Davis explained that the shark was in pretty shallow water, and the shark had been swimming in a circle. So this was essentially its tail going back and forth as it swam in the circle and was disturbing the sediment at the bottom of this part of the ocean, which, you know, if it's that does look pretty shallow. So I think I would believe a shark expert and a shark aerial photographer expert who has seen this stuff for a long, long time. Versus some guy, random guy on the internet saying, "No, man, that's a UFO, man." That's what the guy sounded like. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what that one guy sounded like. I'm talking about this one right here. Well, you don't see what I'm pointing to, but he's a little crazy looking. Anyway, yeah, that's your cryptid stuff. I know it's a little weak, but it's better than the Loch Ness Monster, right? I'm still holding out. We'll see if we can break some records with Loch Ness Monster sighting. I think it's almost the end of August. I think we're going to get at least two more sightings in before the year is out. You can count on that. So don't fret. We'll be talking about the Loch Ness Monster. Yeah, I'm kind of pulling for the Ogopogo myself. Like to see that. That shark, I think he estimated, I think he said it was like 6 foot, something like that. Wasn't that high up. Oh gosh, 10 more stories. I hope not 10 more stories, but we shall see. The future so far is unwritten. And speaking of the future being unwritten, we hope anyway, now we're going to go to Nevada. Nevada, not Nevada. For UFO news, of course, what is happening out in Nevada? Nevada. So I was messing with you. It's Nevada. Of course, the biggest paranormal story of the year, I think, well, maybe so far. It's close. Well, at least UFOs have been probably the two top stories so far. Well, we'll argue that later. Of course, I'm talking about the viral Facebook event, Storm Area 51, which has been in the news now for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, seems like a year. This event was never meant to be serious. We know that. Civilians attempting to storm the Nevada test site. Not a smart one. Not a smart one. We've talked about that at length. So far, everything about this story, it's been pretty straightforward. You know, no controversies. We've really understood everything. No conspiracies, no cover-ups or anything. The government, said, "Hey, look, we can't talk about our security measures, but don't try it. You think you can't outrun a bullet? Well, you won't even see where the bullet's coming from, basically. So take that threat and put it in your shorts." And, it's, you know, like I said, it's been pretty straightforward. We had a little bit of a hiccup there with when Facebook pulled the website for a couple of days, but then they brought it back saying that it broke the user agreement, whatever that meant. But it came back and actually helped further this event even more because of the stories that were pushed out because of the Facebook site had been taken down. So if they intended for it to shut it down symbolically as well as literally, it really backfired. But yeah, no controversies, conspiracies, or cover-ups. That is until now. Yes, there is controversy, conspiracies, and cover-ups going on about this silly event. going on out west. The Alien Stock event now is what it's known. Granted, I'm sure people are still considering it the Storm Area 51 event. But again, last week I talked about how the event was formally announced as the Alien Stock, an event put on instead of encouraging people to mindlessly attempt to gain entry into the base and rescue them aliens. I won't even talk about the cheek part. Instead, the Alien Stock event promises live music and refreshments, which is an idea that it sounds harmless, right? It sounds okay. On the surface, it doesn't sound that bad. But underneath that, it started out as people illegally trying to gain entry into a federal site from the, you know, the Air Force. That's really, you don't want to do stuff like that. They think that this is going to counteract everything and make everything better, make everyone happy, and you come out and listen to music and hopefully get some water, which, again, I don't think it's a great idea because it coincided with the same weekend, the same time that people were looking to storm the base. Despite the comical roots of the idea. So, yes, this was a joke. It was never meant for people to get airplane tickets and to rent rooms at the little alien inn, whatever it's called, in Rachel, Nevada. It wasn't meant to be that serious. And last week, I also mentioned how Rachel, Nevada, the town website, put up a warning on, its official town website, saying, quote, "The residents were not asked and are not on board and will certainly not allow their town to be taken over," unquote. That is a quote. Well, apparently, this statement on the Rachel Nevada website is not entirely accurate. Or is it? We don't know. Brock Daly, who is the event organizer for Alien Stock, who works for the Hidden Sound, which is funny because if you know anything about the roots of this event. So the Hidden Sound has a little bit of a hidden thing with this whole theme. Anyways, he says that this is not how the town actually feels. He told EDM Now, a news source that covers electronic dance music and related news. He said, quote, "Apparently this man has had disputes with the little alien. However, he is the only person in town who has access to the town website, so he controls it, regardless of what 99% of the town would say," unquote. And Daly also says that 99% of the residents of Rachel are excited about the event. And it's not that hard to do the math. There's, 54, granted I've heard 58 actual residents. So if 99% of the people are on board, that's pretty much 53 out of 54, or 57 out of 58 right there. The man behind the town's website, Jorg Arnu, who first moved to Rachel back in 2003, well, he told Time magazine, quote, "I'll do anything in my power to prevent this," unquote. Drop the mic and kick the cat. Wondered about the cat part. But Bob Clayball, a retired pilot who has lived in Rachel for over two decades, well, he says, quote, "There's just a lot of reasons not to have this many people here without a serious planned system set up for it," unquote. Oh, I agree. So right there's two people. So that percentage is falling pretty fast. Arnu, Clayball, and others in Rachel are meeting up with the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to help stop this event from occurring. And according to the article, there are a few ideas under consideration, including shutting down Route 375 to prevent anyone from driving the town. I don't think that's going to work. As well as requiring a bond of up to $5 million to hold the concert goers responsible for any mess left behind. Yikes. Cloudball also says, quote, "I'm not opposed to Alien Stock if it's done correctly, but at this point, it's not being handled correctly, and it's certainly not tenable," unquote. No cats, no microphones, just solid statements. Brock Daly, well, he's only 20 years old, so it's pretty doubtful he's really the kind of experience that he's claimed to have had with this purported company that puts on events. How many events he's put on. This seems like a very poorly planned large-scale event that really has very little control of what's going to be taking place out there in the desert. Connie West, the owner of the Little Ailey Inn, says, quote, "I can't wait until it's over," unquote. Probably had a lot more fear and anxiety in her voice than I did. But she's helping to put on the event and is the landowner of where the event will take place. West and her mother own around 35 acres of land around the hotel, and they've rented out around 300 parking spots for camping, 30 RV spots, as well as the 10 rooms at the inn, which are completely booked for the entire weekend. She's asked the help of friends and family, with some of which with military background, to come out and help provide security and other details. And interestingly enough, I never put this together. I never thought about this. Time Magazine points out that this event coincides with the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. Not exactly on the same date, but it's pretty close, and we'll give it, it's close enough. Kind of overlaps. Well, the event in New York was thought to be attracting around 50,000 people, but over 400,000 people showed up, unless you talk to some of these people in their 60s. It sounds like there was like 30 million people, and destroyed the property and was littered with lawsuits, not just debris, but also lawsuits surrounding this event. And this is pretty much what I predicted for this one as well. I don't see the people putting this on getting away unscathed. And what I mean by that, they're going to be in legal trouble. They better have good lawyers, because they are going to get sued by somebody. It's just a matter of who and for how much. It could be the city. It could be the attendees. They're not buying tickets, so there's no liability. You can't make everyone sign something at the door. So guess what? If anything goes wrong, it's on you. That's why I said you should have done tickets. But who am I, right? The article also points out that if the event pushes beyond West's private property, it would trickle into the surrounding federal public land, which would then require them to need a permit from the Bureau of Land Management. Christopher Bush, the chief of communications for the Bureau of Land Management's Nevada sector, says the agency has not yet received any requests to hold an event on public land in Rachel. Well, we've got an update on that, and some new information that just trickled out from events that happened yesterday. As now, I don't know. We got to start the clock. I might put on, you know what? This is a great idea. I just created this now, and hopefully Jim Mallard doesn't steal this to the punch, beat me to the punch, because I know he's getting ready for his show, The Mallard Report, tonight. But I think I'm going to put a countdown clock on the website for this event. I think that should draw some excitement. I know I can't wait. This is going to be a cluster. That's the word. You can use that as a prefix or a suffix or just a verb or whatever you want, but it's going to be cluster. Thanks, Jim. So we're about a month out from Alien Stock. It's going to be called Laughing Stock, I guarantee you. And amidst the confusion and contemplating the tiny town of Rachel, they're bracing for the worst. The absolute worst. They're hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst. Yesterday, the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners drafted an emergency declaration for the crowds that will more than likely make their way to the area. County Commission Chairman Varlin Higbee said officials are realizing the potential impact of this event, as well as another one in the county created to hopefully take on some of the overflow from the original Storm Area 51 event. Officials are concerned about how the surge of visitors will affect fuel stops, food supplies, medical supplies, medical personnel, fire personnel, and other facilities, including the internet and cell phone service. Can you imagine for a second all these millennials showing up all the way out there in the desert and find out that there's no cell phone coverage and no internet? What are they going to do? What are they going to do? They'll walk around staring at their cell phones? Great, I just lost like 10 listeners, but that's okay. All of these things are already at a minimal for the town of Rachel, because it's less than 60. The county itself doesn't have that many people either, so they're not bracing normally for this kind of influx of people. The emergency declaration being pre-signed helps in part due to the threat of resources, including financial and emergency response, but also due to officials having to work some heavy-duty overtime. They know it's coming. Both the alien stock and an event at the Alien Research Center souvenir shop in Hico, Nevada, which I think the Alien Research Center was actually the original spot where this is supposed to take place. So I guess it's not really stealing from alien stock. Both of these events have been approved. And question the chat room, how much money did they raise? Nobody knows. We have no clue. They were trying to raise money, and they didn't do it through Kickstarter or anything like that. They did it pretty much private, so nobody really knows how much money is actually going in the pockets of these people. And if, in fact, this event does get canceled, or the county steps up and says, you know what, it's not happening, the state may jump in at some point and say, you know what, we're not going to allow this to happen. Granted, there's already been so much money already exchanged for the little alien, and I'm sure for vendors, and there's rumors that Limp Bizkit might be there. Don't quote me on that one. That's just a rumor I saw floating around the internet, because they're in the area, and I don't think they're officially on tour right now, but not that I follow them. I don't know. It's just a lot of money already exchanging hands. It's already out of control. But as far as how much that the people behind this event have made remains to be seen. But I do know that they're spending a lot of money trying to get supplies and things. The state and the city and the county have already dumped a bunch of money into this. So this is already pretty much a disaster for everybody involved. But the events have been approved. Lincoln County Sheriff Kerry Lee said his department is reaching out to everyone, federal, state, and local agencies, to find out who can help send what. They need people. They need maybe even fuel, food, supplies, emergency responders, everything they can for that weekend. They know they're going to be overwhelmed. The department only has 28 uniformed officers in the 11,000 square miles of county land. Granted, that's not normally an issue, but again, there's going to be a large influx of people. Even if their estimates are low, you're still talking about 10 to 20,000 people descending in this area. That's still a lot. And if it's any more than that, this is going to turn into a major, major disaster. And things are not going to go well. You're going to have things out of control. You're going to have a lot of destruction out there. This is going to leave a permanent scar out in the desert that we'll be able to tell our children about in 10 years, I guarantee you. So Lee further commented. He says, quote, "Again, we don't know what to plan for. We're only planning for the worst and hoping for the best." And again, this story has just got out of control. It's ridiculous. I would have just let it go. I would have let it fade away. They had already lost control of the Facebook site. People were already trying to advertise for t-shirts and other things, and people are already taking tickets for this event, which are taking money for tickets for this event, which is not, they're not doing that anyway, but other people are making money off of this. You've lost control of this. I would have just said, nope, we're not doing nothing, and just shut it down. Have a laugh. Nobody gets hurt, and nobody gets sued. That's the important thing. We don't want anybody getting hurt, and we certainly don't want anybody's lives to be ruined financially over some silly Facebook thing. But it looks like it's going forward. So we're going to have some entertainment here next month and let the countdown begin. And in ghost news, in case you forgot, I try to remind you at the top of the hour, but I don't know, maybe you're tuning in late or you tuned out earlier. I don't know what you're doing. That cheesecake looks good. I like that. That's a pretty good cheesecake you got there. Anyway, the new season of Ghost Hunters starts tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday, August 21st. But as always, be sure to check your local listings. I always like saying that. I think it's fun. Tomorrow will actually feature two brand new shows back to back, including one focusing on the century-old Pocatello High School in Idaho. Wednesday? Is tomorrow Wednesday? I hope so, because otherwise I'm talking to myself tonight. Which some say that's a common occurrence. Anyway, I did have a chance to preview that episode about Pocatello High School, and I did talk about it back on July 30th, that episode of the Paranormal News Insider. So it's a new mixture of people, and I mean, what I saw probably wasn't completely 100% edited. So I don't know how it's going to differ. I'm kind of excited to see the difference, actually, to see what if it's the same exact episode or they change anything. They probably didn't change much of anything. It is a new mixture of people, and while they did do a decent amount of debunking, it really seemed they just did it only to set up some other silly moments of buying into personal experiences as evidence later on in the show. But all in all, it wasn't too bad. It's not my kind of TV, but I do have to say I'm really happy that they seem set on helping people. That seems to be the focus here a little bit more. I know they talked that smack in their first kind of run of the show, but you know we all knew what they were there for. The screaming and yelling and pointing at things and making the fancy DVDs for the family to take home. But it seems like they are focusing on helping people more than catching cool subjective things on gadgets and calling it evidence. But we shall see. I've only seen the one episode, so I can't speak for the whole season. But not saying I'm excited, but it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this and how the show does, really. And it's to me, it's kind of sad that people get their training from this show, but it's entertainment. Yes, it's partially real, but it's not really real. It's scripted TV. So, yeah, just chew some popcorn, settle in front of the TV tomorrow night, and check it out. Now, if you've watched A&E lately, and I mentioned this earlier, or you plan on watching tonight or tomorrow, they're running some episodes of the older Ghost Hunters episodes. Well, they've rebranded it. It's rebranded. It's no longer called Ghost Hunters. The old episodes are not called Ghost Hunters anymore. It's called Ghost Hunters Classic. It's like the show is some sort of soda pop or something. That's why I call it New Ghost Hunters. New and improved flavor. Still stains your teeth. After the second new episode Wednesday night, the new episode of Psychic Kids will make its debut, where we get to see these kids all growed up, talking about their pathway from the TV show back, I guess it was, 10 years ago already? So we'll get to see how things turned out for all these folks. Again, this all happens Wednesday, August 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern, but be sure to check and verify your local listings. Don't take my word for it. Yeah, and that brings us to some other news, some spooky, scary stuff. I don't know. I'm sure they get residuals. They have to get residuals But everybody's got to get paid for that stuff. And I wasn't sure how that worked. If A&E bought the rights to the entire show or just to film new seasons, but apparently they're showing old episodes. So I don't know how Sci-Fi benefits from that, or if they do at all. Or if it was just a one-time, like, hey, we'll give this to you for $4 million, and you could do with whatever you want. I don't know how all that worked, the financials. I mean, they're missing out. They should be selling memorabilia, launch boxes, T-shirts, hats, monogrammed EMF detectors, whatever it takes. Yeah, we didn't talk about that, did we? Oh, we did talk about the Zach Bagans bought that murder, the Manson murder house. Yeah, we talked about that last week. That's ridiculous. Well, the Taps guys actually were a little concerned about that. They did talk to them about that, and they're hoping that that doesn't happen, that they don't use that for TV or anything else. Come on. You know they're going to. It's just a matter of time. Anyway, let's go to Missouri. Why? Why not? Jefferson County, Missouri, is facing some rather interesting findings around the cities of Festus and Crystal City lately. Since August 8th, child-sized dolls have been appearing in public places in strange stances. And even some weird spots, too. Some of the dolls have no heads or no faces. And some of the dolls have their hands stitched to their faces. And they're all posed as if a child was really in danger. Creepy stuff. And I do have one picture, at least one picture, I think. Oh, yeah. This is all you need, folks. You see this, and you know what I'm talking about. Really spooky stuff. To be driving down the road, and all of a sudden you look over, and you see that. Looks like a little child kneeling, crying against a pole out there in the almost in the middle of the road. That's not good. Is that a taco place back there? I can't tell. Not good. Not good. So the dolls are creepy since, again, they're child size and posed as if the child was really out in danger. There was one found near a dumpster. It looked like it was like laying face down. One was actually found hanging from a light pole. And again, one in this picture here is actually leaning up against looks like a big light pole. Could be a stoplight pole hanging, but it looks like it's crying, facing away with its hands up in its face. Very creepy. Some of the dolls appear to be the same type of doll, yet are wearing different dresses. And they've all been put in places where the intent was obviously for them to be discovered by somebody passing by. So, yeah, it's creepy. And I don't know, you know, you wonder where these dolls were taken from. I think the city... I'm trying to remember. I did some research on this Festus city. I think there's 11,000 people. So you'd think that somebody, somewhere, if they were to see these, I mean, it's all over the news out there in Missouri. So I'm sure somebody somewhere knows who's got these dolls. I mean, a town of 11,000 people, that's not that many people. I'm sure word's getting out. But you know, it's creepy. Some people, I don't think any people actually think it's funny. Some people are kind of lighthearted about it, but it seems like a lot of people are a little creeped out about this because there's concern. You know, what is the motive for this person that's putting these things all over the place? The Festus chief of police, Tim Lewis, feels this is just an elaborate prank by somebody trying to get attention, which I kind of agree with. Although it seems like they're going through an awful lot of trouble. I mean, if you just throw a random doll on the road, let's say, okay, some kid maybe toss it out the window here or there or put it in the drive-thru of Burger King or something. Yeah, I don't know. But a little bit of trouble here with sewing the hands to the face and positioning these dolls. Somebody's really going through a lot to do this. And I almost think it's maybe somebody trying to gauge how people would react. That's my guess. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit. That's kind of how what I think here is going on. But Chief of Police Tim Lewis of Festus feels, again, it's an elaborate prank. But his concern is that somebody is going to do the right thing here. They're going to stop. They're going to think it's a real child. They're going to get out of their car and try to help them and inadvertently put themselves in harm's way by another vehicle, possibly striking their vehicle or them in an attempt to help this doll. And one of the dolls did prompt a 911 call already, and I believe it's the one in the picture there. And Lewis is concerned that the good-hearted citizens of Festus might get injured as a result of this prankster. That threat is real. But what everyone wants to know is why. And maybe almost importantly is who is behind these dolls being put around the city in odd poses. But like many of these types of stories, I've got a weird feeling that we're never going to find out. Again, it's a small town. It's like 11,000 people, but you'd think that somebody would recognize these dolls or the clothes on these dolls. But the more time that goes by, I'm thinking that we're never going to find out, because just as the story began to gain popularity over the last 4 days, the doll sightings have stopped. No more new dolls. Now, maybe they ran out of dolls. Maybe they ran out of clothes. I don't know. It's creepy either way. But things have slowed down. They've stopped. We've not seen any more instances. At least I've not read anything coming out of this area. Nothing today, nothing yesterday new. But it makes you wonder, you know, who's out there doing this? And are they just going to wait a couple of days and then do it again? It's creepy. And this story actually reminds me of one that happened in Orange County, California, back in July of 2014. This is a little bit different because these were custom porcelain dolls that were turning up the homes of 8 families. And the really creepy thing, you know, they were just showing up at the doorstep of these families around the front yard, which is creepy enough, right? But these dolls were dressed and designed to look a lot like the children living in the homes. So they had the same hair, same hairstyle, similar clothing designed specifically for these dolls. So, yeah, that prompted the police to get in on this. And the lady eventually stepped forward who was doing this. She was apparently doing this because she was trying to provide happiness to the families and to the children. But apparently, you can't do that nowadays. I mean, whatever happened to baking a pie, bringing over cookies, you know, something like that. Food is better than creepy dolls any day of the week. I mean, hopefully, I don't know what's going to happen with these dolls. Hopefully, they're cleaned up, maybe put a sew a face on them and hand them out to the needy children of Missouri. That would be nice. That maybe there's a good ending to this. These dolls get a home. We'll find out. Hopefully we find out. And I would love to put an ending to a story like that. Any kind of creepy story you hope you can solve. But we'll have to keep posted to Jefferson County, Missouri to see what happens. And, what else is going on? I didn't think I would have extra time tonight. But I do want to mention, I'm excited to get my hands on a new book that's headed my way. I'm going to kind of tease you guys with this. It's called Cryptidpedia, and it was written by Francis and Lucas Rosa. If you've never seen this, never heard of it, it's available on Etsy, and it's also available on Amazon.com, probably among other places. But they're twins, and they wrote this really interesting picture book. It's an encyclopedia on cryptids. I mean, you've seen some out there, but this one is like really looks really, really good. I haven't got my hands on this thing yet. I'm excited to get this. I don't know why. It just captivated me, and I can't wait to talk about it. Can't wait to review it. Can't wait to talk about it to you guys, because I know you have an interest in this. I'm going to try to get back into the book of the week that I used to do oh so long ago. I don't think I've done that since coming to the Paranormal King Radio Network, but I'll probably get into it. It's just a lot of extra work on top of all the other work I'm doing, but at least mention a book here and there. And I do want to kind of shout out to new authors or people putting out books. And it just seems like so much has come out in the last couple of years, and I feel bad that I'm not talking about that, but I do enjoy talking about other media going on out there, and these paranormal conferences, conventions, all those things, because, you know, people are putting a lot of work into this, and people need educational outlets more than TV shows. So this Cryptidpedia book looks really, really interesting, and could be a nice book for a younger reader to actually get involved, and I've seen that really influence young people a lot, as well as TV shows, but we shall see. When I get my hands on the book, I'll hopefully have a day or two to read it, and then I'll talk about it here on the show, and really need to get my rear in gear. I was trying to design a page with all the books that I've mentioned here on the show as books of the week, officially books of the week. But I don't know how in-depth I'm going to be this time around, because you know, I really tied it into stories that were going on. But I think I did over 200 books. And then, no, I couldn't have. I didn't do 200 shows. I don't know. It felt like it. 200 books. But I have at least 200 books on the paranormal all over the place surrounding me. Just hope they don't catch on fire because I'm in trouble. But anyway, that is your show tonight. That is your Paranormal News Insider for August 20th. Can't believe it's almost September already. So anyway, I will see you next week. Well, at least you'll hear me next week. You know how that goes. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.